Welcome to the Dialogue by Wirepoints, connecting the dots between our economy, government, and people. And now your hosts, Ted Dabrowski and Mark Glennon.
Welcome to the Dialogue by Wirepoints. This is Mark Glennon. I'm here with my colleague, Wirepoints President Ted Dabrowski. Our bread and butter here at Wirepoints is fiscal and financial information and the economies of state and local governments. But that subject has been overridden to a large degree by the COVID pandemic. So we've turned quite a bit of our attention to that. We have to for a lot of reasons. It's driving state and local budgets, among other reasons, because of the deluge of federal money that has come in. Illinois has now received a total of $190 billion. That's at all levels of government and the private businesses and people, and it's still growing. That has changed everything in state and local government. You can call it a pretext, perhaps, if that's your view about what the federal government is doing, or a bailout, or just genuine COVID relief, if that's what you think it is. But no matter what your perspective is on that, it has changed things. So that's why we follow it. Today, we're focusing on a topic that has not been covered properly by the media, and which the healthcare authorities have suppressed for reasons that you'll see. And that is the number of fully vaccinated people dying from COVID nevertheless. That's a large number, and it's been growing since midsummer. It's been shrinking actually a bit recently, along with most reported deaths, as COVID has gotten under better control. We don't know whether that'll turn up again in the fall, as we saw last year. But in any case, it's a substantial number. We just put an article up on it, and we include these numbers now in our daily blast of data, which you can sign up free for our daily email. That's on our website too. And the numbers come from the Illinois Department of Public Health, but we have to do some math on them to get them presented properly, which is what we do. They are updated every week. So we do that update every week, and it's up there permanently for you to see. Ted, why don't you get us started on what those numbers have shown us recently?
Yeah. So, we've been waiting to see whether IDPH and of course CDC provide us with the information we need to understand breakthroughs. It's so important to understand them because, we're talking about mandates, vaccine mandates. We're talking about still some of the most, punitive rules or mandates in the country, when it comes to masks and lockdowns, not lockdowns, but vaccinations. So, we've started to track that. IDPH has started to put that number out, as you said, and the most recent week, which is a pretty important set of numbers, there were 62 fully vaccinated Illinoisans who died from COVID. And that was 36% of the total COVID deaths for that week. We've had another 48 breakthrough deaths for the week ending on the 20th. So I think that's going to be around 25%. If I've done a quick estimation of the numbers. So, it's not insignificant. And, we're still having, on average, we've been averaging about 30 deaths a day, something like that, over the last few weeks. So, you're talking about 200 deaths. And so to have anywhere from 50 to 60 to 70, or we had even 95 breakthrough deaths in 1 week, it's significant. And why it's important is that because if you look at, what the press has been saying all along nationally and in many places, it's been the unvaccinated who are overwhelmingly the ones dying. And, that's still true that they are the ones that are overwhelmingly dying. But, the vaccinated, these breakthroughs are becoming significant. And it certainly kind of challenges some of the data that's being put out. Like IDPH on their website announces that we've had, as of before today, 679 breakthrough deaths. And the number they put right under that is 0.009% of fully vaccinated population. So the way they're presenting it makes it look teeny, and of course the numbers we're putting out, brings it to life. Hey, listen, it's up to a third of the people who are dying on a weekly basis.
That's right. It's about a third since the summer, after the vaccinations have clipped in. About a third of the total COVID deaths have been breakthroughs, and the press consistently gets this wrong. They're repeating that statement that the breakthrough deaths are trivial or nothing to focus on. But they have kind of an excuse, Ted, and the problem is that IDPH data is cumulative. That is, they just focus on the numbers of total breakthrough deaths going back to really since day one of vaccinations, roughly January 1 of this year. Well, that's misleading because there were no breakthroughs. There weren't that many vaccinated people, for starters. And most importantly, we know that the vaccines are most effective early on, but their effectiveness dies off after, particularly right about the 5 or 6 month break. So that's exactly what happened. In August, that's when the numbers really started to tick up. That's what we're seeing. We don't know where it's going to go from here, but it's obviously something we need to watch. And there's a lot of very distinct reasons why we need to focus on these particular numbers. This is a kind of a nuanced topic. I mean, don't think that this is a pro-vax or an anti-vax message or anything else. We got a lot of people on both sides that politicize this and simplify it too much. We want to guard against that. And as you'll see there's things to be thought about on a number of angles on this. Ted, why are these breakthrough numbers important? Let's go through some of the reasons.
Well, let's see, we've got a list of things, and I guess we could start with number one. The breakthroughs are people thinking that vaccinations really protected people. If you're an elderly person and you're now vaccinated and you think that you can just go around and be with anybody, maybe you have to really think about that, especially if you have a comorbidity. So, you highlighted in one of your pieces, Mark, I'm forgetting who the TV guy was, but he was there with I think he's immunocompromised and he's out with people and thinks he's safe. But, we have to be careful that whatever messages are sent, don't send the wrong message or create wrong behavior based on wrong data.
Yeah, that's a John King, the head national correspondent for CNN. And he, on a national broadcast, said he's immunocompromised and has multiple sclerosis. And so he thanked the people on his staff and the panel in front of him for being fully vaccinated. Well, vaccines help, and as we're going to describe, but he's making a big mistake if he's seriously at risk and he thinks that he's protected just because those people are vaccinated. They do get sick, and even when they're not sick, they spread the disease at a pace arguably just as fast as unvaccinated people. We have an article up to that effect. We'll link it with this podcast. And more and more studies and evidence is coming out to show that. This isn't just us saying this, by the way. There's people like Professor Bhattacharya at Stanford. He's a Stanford professor and epidemiologist who has been making this point emphatically. There are a number of others who have been warning about this, but it just doesn't make it into most of the press. So that's one reason, Ted. I mean, just from a matter of personal conduct and choice for those who are not facing a mandate, this is something to be aware of.
Yeah, a bigger one, of course, is a big justification by many for the mandate is that the vaccine protects against spread, and that if you're one, if you're protected, and two, if you're not spreading it, then the mandate becomes a really good idea in their eyes. But however, we have to start thinking about that. If in fact, and a lot of the research is showing that if breakthrough cases are increasing, if breakthrough deaths are increasing, if vaccinated people can spread COVID, as the research, heavy research is showing that. And of course, we're going to have to sift through the research and have debating research sides, keep proving things. And this is why we bring them up as issues, not necessarily be adamant about things. But it surely raises the question whether then the mandate makes any sense at all, because if in fact people can still spread, well then, what we do know, and Mark, you've made this clear, what we do know from all the research is that the vaccines do protect people, do a really good job of protecting people from serious illness and death. And so we're not talking about that, but what we're talking about is, so therefore a vaccine can be a really good decision for one. But the question is, does the mandate of any kind really, really work, or does it make sense given the data we're seeing and the research we're seeing?
Yeah, the main rationale for the mandate has been that, look, we're not just talking about your individual health. That's why this can't be left to individual discretion or informed consent, the mandate proponents say. It's because you can spread it to other people. You're putting other people at risk. But if it turns out, as the evidence is now strongly indicating, that the vaccine doesn't make any difference in how much you have the potential for infecting other people, well, then the rationale for the mandate is gone. And people are starting to figure this out, you know, and especially is true with people who have already had a disease, have natural immunity, as it's called, which is at least as robust as the immunity you get from a vaccine. You know, I had a final reason why this is important. It's because it's just yet another example of how the press is not doing the job on this. They're not covering this topic like so many others properly. And the healthcare authorities are distorting the data. And there's really no avoiding the charge here that it's deliberate. Aside from that issue with IDHP data, try to get this data from The Nation. It's the CDC website. They too bury it in cumulative data, and they don't even provide the weekly numbers. So you can't go behind the numbers and do the math as we did for Illinois to try to figure out what the national trends are. Obviously, this is a topic of importance that the CDC could be putting up really good numbers for us that would be very useful, and they don't do it. Why? In my opinion, because they've made a decision early on that they're going to bet the ranch on masks and vaccines. They don't want to talk about anything else. Anything that distracts attention from that isn't anything they're going to bother with.
Along those lines, Mark, you know, it's really fascinating is that, you know, a lot of the data is moving in the opposite direction. And, you know, I think we're providers of counter-information because I think the overall press is very strong on one side, as you just said. And they're stuck on one side. And so what we're attempting to do is just to bring the counter arguments to make sure that the other research or other data gets play because it should get play. And it should be part of the debate and the dialogue on that. And, you know, a perfect example is places like Vermont and Maine. You know, there's a study that you wrote on as well, Mark, on the by the European Journal of Epidemiology. And, you know, they looked at Vermont and Maine. They have some of the highest, I think, well, maybe it's the highest rates of vaccination in the country. And yet, if you go look, I was on Worldometer this morning just looking at it, and Vermont and Maine are hitting all-time highs in cases right now, and their deaths are up as well. And so, you know, it just begs the question, how can you have a breakdown in correlation there where high vaccination rates are leading to the highest case rates in their record for those states?
Yeah, and the San Francisco Chronicle, which is no right-wing sort of outlet, did a nice article on just that topic. They pointed out the obvious disconnect between high vaccination rates and high infection rates in across U.S. states. And that European study was published in the European Journal. It's actually done by a Harvard epidemiologist. Again, we've linked to that on our site too. That's, I think, the biggest and most recent one. And it looked at the county level in the United States and European countries. And as you say, it concluded that there's no difference between the rates at which you infect other people, depending on whether you're vaccinated. In fact, at the county level in the United States, they saw a bit of a negative correlation. The vaccinated people, they thought, tend to infect people more often. Now, you know, other scientists will disagree with that. Dr. Arwadi in Chicago, who I respect, you know, has pointed out that, well, look, if the vaccine is reducing the number of infections, and it is, well, the time at which you're most infectious and likely to spread in it somebody is when you're infected. So, you know, that should indicate that vaccines help reduce reinfection rates. Well, that's how it should work, but it's not turning out that way for whatever reason. And there's another study up we'll be putting up shortly that attributes this to viral load. That is, and the CDC did go out of its way to point out some very strong evidence that even among the vaccinated, the viral load that they carry is nevertheless very high. Remember that outbreak that happened in, I think the town's name is Middletown in Massachusetts over 4th of July weekend, where they had a very large, intense group of people. A bunch of infections resulted. They were primarily concentrated in vaccinated people, and they tested the viral loads in those people, which were very, very high, indicating that that those viral loads accounted for the retransmission rates. Well, let's go back to that primary new data that we're doing, because Ted, we're the first ones to report this data. You got to do just a little math on the data that the IDPH has up on its site. But we're talking basically about a third of total COVID deaths now being breakthrough deaths, people who were vaccinated already. Where do you think it's going to go from here, Ted? What's the direction going forward, or do we know, do you think?
Well, you know, there's a tricky thing, and one thing we have to be careful of is, you know, if you play this out and vaccinations continue to increase, you know, if you look at Illinois, we're about 56% vaccinated overall for all ages. And, you know, and it's interesting, but the 65 and older crowd with one dose is 97%. So, you know, as we get more and more vaccinated, by definition, more and more of the population that dies is going to be vaccinated. And, you know, it should be that way. So at some point, this percentage look on the numbers won't make sense. But for now, I think it does, because you still have a good mix of the unvaccinated and vaccinated dying.
Let me just pipe in, because there's one very clear reason we've already been questioned on this, that, you know, you need to adjust for the different levels of who's vaccinated and who isn't. Not really, not for now, because right now, right about half of Illinois is vaccinated, a little over 50%. So if you made an adjustment for that, it wouldn't budge that 30% number very much. So for the time being, it's correct to say that about 30% of our deaths since about August, late July actually, have been breakthrough cases of the vaccinated.
Well, yeah, they've been going slightly up, and that's where I was going to hit, Mark. You know, and we haven't discussed Delta, but you know, and I haven't really seen anything that particularly describes this as Delta, but it's clear that Delta has been more contagious, and so therefore, you know, maybe it's reaching more the elderly. What is still interesting about a lot of this data here, and maybe it makes sense to most people, I still have to think about it. You know, the fact that you have almost 90-something% of elderly with one jab. We ran the numbers recently, and since July 1st, since the Delta variant came into full force, more than 75% of our deaths are still people 65 and older. So what it does tell you is that, I guess, even though you're going to have, and this is part of the whole thing, even though you're going to have vaccinated people, vaccinated elderly, you're still going to have breakthroughs, because the elderly are the ones with comorbidities and they're more susceptible. So, but to take a step back, if you look at this, it kind of, the numbers do go up. Breakthrough deaths as a percentage of deaths have been going up from that, you know, 10% in July. And it's been slowly creeping up a little bit, you know, up and down, but it's crept up to this 36% that we just recently saw. And, you know, it looks like an upward trend. I don't know. It's too short data, and I don't think we have enough information. But, you know, it certainly is worrisome, because it looks like a nice straight upward line. So I don't know where it goes, but we certainly want to watch it, because I think it tells a lot about policy, or it should influence policy, and there should be a lot of questions asked.
And this is where it gets a little bit tricky. But the good news is that both numbers have been going down in the last couple of months. That is, total deaths from COVID and total breakthrough deaths. That's true in Illinois, and it's true across most of the nation. It tracks a very similar pattern that occurred last summer. Maybe this has something to do with the weather, although by this time last year, the numbers had started to tick up again. Maybe we're going to be spared that uptick in colder weather this year. Who knows? I'm certainly not pretending to know. But the point is that for now, about 30% of our cases are breakthroughs. And so the notion that this is a pandemic of the vaccinated is clearly not true. And it's that point, Ted, that you just made that really bothers me about the concentration continuing in the deaths of older people. I worry about over-reliance here. I think a lot of people, particularly older people, if they're listening to the official line, they'll say, you know, they heard early on, certainly health authorities say, these vaccines are, 95% effective, extremely effective. Get the vaccine, go live your life as normal. And of course, they talk up the efficacy of masks too. So you see elderly people out and about that, people in their 80s that might be taking that literally. And I'm not so sure that they would be. That's why I think it was particularly foolish of John King at CNN to essentially be telling people that are immunocompromised that he should thank all the people around him that are vaccinated. I think they ought to be more careful than he was letting on. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I met a man where in one of the offices we work in, and he's definitely an elderly man. He was probably about 80, and I met him, and this is early on. This is before vaccines, and he was not wearing his mask. And I approached him just as we work on this issue. So I asked him, sir, I'm not trying to judge. I'm just curious. You're not wearing a mask. And he goes, well, he'd been following the numbers. He knew the numbers and he knew that elderly died, but he also knew that whatever it was that, if 10% of the elderly die, will 90% live? And so he threw out that data at me. He says, well, look, I got a 9 out of 10 chance of living. And I said, okay. And that's okay, because he was making some kind of calculated risk. The question is, though, and you and I have critiqued this, there's not the proper presentation of data, there's not the right correct data to allow an 80-year-old to make whatever assessment he or she wants to make, regardless of how much risk they want to take. They should at least have the data and know what the breakthrough deaths are, who's dying, why they're dying, who's comorbid. We don't have any of that yet. So I think your point is right.
Yeah, and they certainly should not be given rigged data. I mean, even if it's pursuant to a white lie, that's just not the role of the government. They're not going to get away with that anymore. And it's going to be particularly important now as we move to the new stage in this, which is booster shots. Governor Pritzker announced this week that he'll be making a full court press to get people to take boosters, pretty much the same at the federal government. The reason being, as I indicated before, that the vaccines have turned out to be quite effective initially, but that effectiveness tails off a lot, particularly by the fifth or sixth month. And the data is kind of changing on this all the time. People are watching it pretty closely. You can look this up by vaccine, depending on which you have, and see which ones are holding up better than others, but they're all subject to this diminishing return after a period of time. So we're turning to boosters now. Well, if the government wants to encourage that, fine, but boy, they better have some better credibility than they have last time around, and they're not doing it. This is not, as I've said before, this is not 1916 anymore, when the federal government could get away with suppressing information about the Spanish flu. Word gets out eventually. They may pull off their narrative in the short term, but people are getting very suspicious for good reason, and they've got a big wall to climb in order to restore their credibility on boosters. And I'm not taking a side against boosters. I'm anxious to hear what the data and information say, but Ted, what do you think? Is that going to be the new, and what implications are there for a new stage in this where the topic is boosters?
Well, boosters are going to be a big deal, but I think maybe to answer that, I want to talk a little bit about what's going to challenge the whole concept of boosters. And I don't mean challenge the concept of boosters, but it keeps raising new questions. And that's the value of naturally acquired immunity. And you're starting to see all kinds of reports come out. And again, I always have to separate what we talk about. for me, there's the elderly, those 65 and older, in particular 70 and 80, who have all kinds of risk and comorbidities. You know, my mom is that age, and, you know, I was a big proponent of her getting vaccinated as soon as possible, because, you know, that's, I think, based on the numbers I look at every day, it's like, it's a slam dunk decision. But now you're starting to see all kinds of data. And, you know, now I start to think about my daughters and others who maybe are young or middle aged, as you start to see all this natural immunity data, and how much of the data is saying that, hey, if you may have stronger defenses if you've been naturally immunized than if you actually have a vaccine. And so maybe that's going to challenge the whole booster discussion, because you know, there's multiple studies coming from many countries that you know, vaccination alone, you know, maybe a weaker than actually, you know, having the natural immunity first. And so that's a big decision for you know, for young people.
Yeah. In fact, I'd encourage folks out there to take a look at a site called the Brownstone Institute. I think it's brownstone.com. These are very reputable scientists. They have a new article out that where they compiled all the research showing the strength of natural immunities. I think the headline of the article is up to 91 now studies showing the power of natural immunity. And most scientists are indicating that that immunity is more powerful and longer lasting than vaccine immunity. Now, you might say, okay, show us the data on that. We get that question all the time. What's the breakthrough level natural immunity? Well, we can't tell you that because they don't publish that, not in Illinois and not at the national level. These studies that are cited have gone out and collected that information on a spot basis. There's a particular study in Israel that's gotten a lot of attention that showed that natural immunity is 13 times more robust than vaccine immunity. But that's the reason why we don't have anything up on our site from about breakthroughs on natural immunity. Incredibly, the government just doesn't give us that information. It's another reason why their credibility is not so good.
Yeah, and it also comes down, you bring it around to policies and mandates where, you know, they're mandating vaccinations, but they're ignoring whether somebody actually already had COVID and therefore had, you know, according to these studies, a strong immunity and longer lasting than maybe the vaccination would provide. And so that, of course, is creating more confusion and more debate, and it should. And you know, I think what's fascinating for me about all this is that when you talk about the top officials, they don't really talk about many of these studies that are out there. And I think only when enough of the press covers it finally, or enough people stand up like this Brownstone Institute, until they put out that much data, does it finally start to get some attention. But you can't continue to, I don't think we can continue to ignore the people with natural immunity and exactly, you know, how have they performed. As you said, we just don't know. We're totally ignorant. And you know what, you know how many, you know, it's what, a couple billion people that have natural immunity now? We should know. We should know a lot about them.
That's right. That's a good question in itself. Here's what we do know. The CDC claims that the portion of the population in the United States that has natural immunity is about 30%. That is at the low end of estimates. I've seen other scientists say it might be as high as 70%. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that hard a calculation to do. We know how many cases there are. Not everybody that gets infected, by the way, develops natural immunity. If they have a mild case, they never build up the antibodies, but they know what that portion is. So you can make some adjustments there. And the CDC's own data early on indicated that it's well higher than 30%. Back in January, it would have indicated that it was well over 50%. But of course, they dropped that data now. They don't talk about it. They don't back up their 30% estimate very well. So we really don't know how many people there are out there. You can test yourself, by the way. Go in and get an antibody test, a serology test, as they're called. And if you think you had the disease or you know you had it, you're probably going to find that you have antibodies. And to a lot of people would say that's the answer. Now, that doesn't mean that a vaccine won't help you further. It will. Again, I think the experts agree on that. And if I were older and had a comorbidity and had a serious risk, I'd probably get the vaccine anyway. But, you know, younger people that already have antibodies, it's a different story. One very famous immunologist from Yale, his name is Harvey Risch, said that that's kind of the new reality that we're facing. Given these levels of breakthroughs, most everybody's going to get this eventually. I mean, you may get a booster shot. They may turn out to be pretty effective, but eventually you're going to get caught because this is so prevalent out there with even immunized people carrying the virus around. And so at the end of the day, it's going to be natural immunity that suppresses the disease, whether we like that or not. I don't know whether that's true. Other scientists will argue with that, but that's one outlook. So one place where this debate is popping up, of course, is in the growing fight over mandates. Governor Pritzker has one in place for some state employees. Mayor Lightfoot in Chicago is getting national attention because of the fight over a mandate for police, which many of them are resisting and refusing to take it. And most fundamentally, President Biden has ordered OSHA, the Occupational Health and Safety Division of the federal government, to begin enforcing mandates on private businesses. That's going to get challenged in court heavily. It's not a slam dunk that the Biden administration will lose, although most legal authorities that I've seen seem to think they will lose. But irrespective of the legal issues, people are rebelling against this. You know, you see it in many places. State troopers in the state of Washington are refusing to take this. They're trying to force this on Navy SEALs and people in the military who are resisting it. The Chicago police thing obviously can become very important because we need the police to control the crime wave in Chicago. You know, Ted, do you sense that this revolution against mandates is as strong as I think it is? Because I think the winds are getting behind the people object to mandates right now. The government's going to have a hard time maintaining credibility on this. What's your sense of it?
Well, I think the credibility argument is certainly one. Before this, I was just looking at, you know, what kind of mandates were out there, just starting with mask mandates. And, you know, there's 10 states that have, you know, strict mask mandates. And of course, Illinois is one of them. The rest don't have a mask mandate or a serious one. 13 states that are led by Democrat governors recently dropped the enforcement of mask mandates. So you can see that there's a varying level of intensity on what's going on. And then when you come back to the vaccine mandates, of course, you know, we all know President Biden's plans and the ones you mentioned. And there's a lot of intensity, but it's hard for me to figure out where that is. And part of it is because we're in Illinois and we're bombarded with, I think, very strict laws, and we forget that there's a whole bunch of other states that are more relaxed about many things. And, you know, a couple states even, you know, ban any kind of mandate. So coming back to your point, I do think that, you know, looking at, you know, the use of President Biden using OSHA as his strategy to get a mandate, I think is really tough because, it's fraught with a lot of problems in the way they've approached it. It's very broad on the one hand. It doesn't care about whether a state has high case rates or high death rates or high hospitalization rates or not. It just says everybody do it. And then at the same time, it's very narrow because it doesn't, you know, it counts federal employees, but it doesn't count all the contractors and others who might be with equal status. They just happen not to be employees. And so there's a lot of mess to that. And there's a lot more that goes in there. It's a lot of contradictory things involved in all these mandates.
Yeah. Let's wrap up with a couple of reminders. Even the scientists, all the scientists that I've seen that are critical of federal government policy and much of the rest, would say that vaccines are quite effective and are appropriate for much of the population, particularly those at risk. I mean, others, of course, go further and say everybody should be getting them. So nobody is saying here that they shouldn't be considered, that they don't have a place in this battle. We happen to be on the side of letting individuals make their own decisions based on the best information that they can. But don't get dragged into categorizing one person or one side as being something. You know, one terrible example is this is horrible, but the Merriam-Webster dictionary changed its definition of anti-vaxxer to include not just people who are against vaccines, but anybody who's against mandates. Well, you know, that's ridiculous. That's just the the cancel crowd on the left, the far left, trying to stereotype anybody who's different from themselves. Don't let that happen in the way you look at different authorities out there or how you read the news. Be skeptical and think things through on your own. You have to pick experts to rely on many of these topics, but pick them carefully. And by all means, question what's coming from the government. If you haven't learned that in life by now, it's about time you do. Dad, you got anything else?
No, I think that's good. I think we have to be willing to read whatever the other side is, right? We have to be able to look at that and stomach it and think about it and try to, whatever, take the good, the bad, the ugly, and marry it with the things we think about. But you definitely have to be open-minded right now. And there's a lot of nuanced arguments that have to be understood too. And I think not everything is absolute as the other thing. I think part of what you and I are talking about is we're against absolutes on anything because it's usually most things aren't absolute. Whether that be a mandate or data. So that's about it.
Absolutely. I agree, Ted. Join us next time for the Dialogue by WirePoints. Look at our site, wirepoints.org. We got a lot of data up there. We've got our own analysis and commentary, but we also include lots of links to third-party articles, including especially those we disagree with. Thanks for joining us at the Dialogue by WirePoints. Come back and listen next time. We'll be back regularly. Thank you.